talking to my people, yeah.
Your life, running like a red disease. Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in a medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history has a free and proud and productive people. We say ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So he poured his libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, blacktalkradionetwork.com, and I am your host, Brother Oshi. Good morning, family. I hope everything is well with you this morning. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, needed to do, have to do, and should do, or must do, and I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it wasn't, I know you had to do it anyway, and you did it, because that's the kind of person you are. You're not a procrastinator. You don't shirk your responsibilities. You get her done. Love that about you, family. Of course, today is the holiday in the Western world, Christmas. And if Christmas is a commercial holiday, it is not a religious holiday. I know people want it to be. They want to. I mean, when you go online and you look at your Facebook account, it says, Jesus is the reason for the season and all these kinds of things. But the reality is, in a capitalistic society, if they didn't have Christmas, they would create it. They have to have something like this, that at a point, for those who are in business and those who want to increase their profit margins, or for those who want to be in the black, just like last month when we talked about Black Friday, they didn't say nothing about no Black Friday 30-something years ago. This started in the 80s. They wouldn't mention anything about anything black because of what this system has deemed black as being, something evil, something sinister, something nasty or sully. And so, but they also recognize the bottom line. You don't want to be in the red. In bookkeeping standpoint, you want to be in the black. And of course, they came up with Black Friday, and of course it is the Friday after Thanksgiving, opening up the shopping season, because that's what it is, a shopping season up to this particular point. You know, I know they want to they want you to believe that this is the birth date of Christ. Of course it is not. Probably there's something that can trace why this is the birth date of Christ, December 25th. And they probably could point to the Nicaea Conference of 325 AD, which was commissioned by Constantine. And because he wanted to solidify the religion, there was some religious problems that were happening in the Roman Empire. Constantine was the emperor of Rome at the time. And, of course, Constantine, if you know the story, supposedly had killed his son, and he seek refuge in the temples in Rome, but they would not pardon him, so to speak. And so, because they understood that what he did was egregious, out of jealousy or envy or whatever. And so he went to the Christians, and they said, well, we'll give you forgiveness. And of course, it was through Christianity. Supposedly, he had a dream. He had a vision that he would conquer through the cross. He would conquer through the cross, and so to quell all of the disagreements, all of the arguments, all of the internal things that were happening in Christendom, he commissioned the Nicene Conference. And it was at the Nicene Conference that everybody was supposed to bring their information and so forth. And I'm not going to go too deeply into that, but that is where, in fact, that's a pivotal. We need to have a program on the Nicene Conference, do some good deep research on the Nicene Conference, maybe get a person who was really astute in what happened at the Nicene, because it was at the Nicene Conference that the religion of Christianity became Caucasian, that the deities in Christianity, the dates and so forth, all these other things happened at the Nicene Conference. Because everything about Jesus the Christ through the Christian religion parodies many other religions. And what all those other religions parody is ancient Kemetic religion. Ancient Kemetic religion. The god of Amun-Ra, the main god. The other gods, Mut, Nut, Aser, Aset, Heru. You know, Set, Jehudi, Heteru, all these other gods that ancient Kemetic society had, because in ancient Kemetic society, people wanted to live righteously. They wanted to live in accordance with the God-man, Aser. They wanted to live under the seven principles of Ma'at, of truth, justice, righteousness, harmony, reciprocity, order, balance. That's what governed the society. So they wanted to live in that way so that when they would die, because they believed in the afterlife and what they did, and they built for eternity. The temples and tombs are still standing. The pyramids are still standing. In fact, there's a saying that man fears time, and believe me, we do. I saw a picture of me the other day. I was like, oh, man, look at the hair. Look at that hair. We fear time. But time alone fears the pyramids. In fact, if you have an opportunity to go to Kemet, and I hope that you do, we were taking some transportation from where we were staying, going to the Giza Plateau, where Hori Maket, which the Greeks call the Sphinx, and the pyramids are located, the Great Pyramid, the Pyramid of Khufu, Menkaure, and Khafre. And what's interesting, from the distance, it was a laser light show. And from a distance, what you see is the silhouette of the pyramids, and they look perfect. Now, today, when you see them, and they're all exposed. Because once they put the last blocks of stone, which weighed tons, a ton, how much is a ton? 2,000 pounds. 2,000 pounds. Some of them were 2, 3, 4 tons. I know. So, when they did that, they put the capstone on top. And once that was done, as they descended, they laid a limestone covering. The pyramids were smooth, polished limestone. When Islam swept through northern Africa, the Muslims did not understand ancient Kemetic society, the monuments, the temples and tombs and so forth, and nor did they really have respect for it. So they began to take the limestone coverings off of the pyramids and use them to build mosques and other buildings, homes, probably whatever, exposing them. And that's how they look today. So when you see them, you come upon them, they're, you know, in fact, you could really literally climb all the way up. Of course, you can't do that. They have the authorities there, and they're armed. But
You can go sit on them and take a picture, or you can do one of those pictures from afar, like you're, you know, with your finger on top of the capstone, you know. But you could do that, but not when they were first built by our people. In fact, every place that I went, even though a lot of it, most of it, in fact, all of it, damn near, in ruins, but you could still see remnants of greatness, and you can visualize how it looked at the time. When you go into those temples and you could see the painting, some of it still looking very fresh. Now, also, I do know that in the Ptolemies, when they came in after Alexander, the so-called great, died, and his Roman generals, the Ptolemy rule came in because ancient Kemetic society, unlike the British rule of hundreds and hundreds of years, as dysfunctional as they were, because in ancient Kemetic society, might did not make right. Right made right, and you were held to standards of righteousness. And so if my father was the Pharaoh, or the king, was the king, the ruler, a good man, a righteous man, a man who was deeply respected and admired, then now I'm in line and I become the ruler. But I'm not so good. I'm not all that, indecisive, weak, and so forth. Well, then what happens is the priesthood gets together. I'm out, and a new line comes in. That's why there were 30 dynasties in ancient Kemetic society, 30 dynasties. And a dynasty is a period of time that a family rules. It could be a day or it could be hundreds of years. That same family could rule. And so what happened is that when Constantine commissioned the Nicene Conference, that's when the birth of Jesus became December 25th. Now we know that the calendar is whack, because even though the ancient Kemetic society developed measurements of time, had a calendar based on 365 days, understood that the earth rotated on its axis, understood the seasons and so forth, because in ancient Kemetic society, how it was developed was through study, communication, cooperation, and organization. Study. They studied everything. Number one, they lived on a river. The Nile River, longest river in the world, over 4,000 miles, is the lifeblood. You don't have Kemet. You don't have the monuments. You don't have the pyramids. You don't have divine kingship. You don't have nothing without the Nile River. But what happens with rivers? They do what? Exactly. They inundate and they recede. They inundate and they recede. And so you have to know when the river is going to flood. You have to know when the river is going to recede. You have to know this for the life of the people. You must plan for this. That takes study. So when they knew that the river was going to inundate, that's when they did tomb building, pyramid building, and so forth. They would go hundreds of miles south. Understand something, the orientation of the ancient Kemetic people was south. It was south because they came from the south. They came from the interior. What would be like the middle or eastern portion of Africa. And then they migrate, even though it's north, the direction, which is when we look at a map, we see north is always goes up, but the Nile River flows in that direction, which is down. So they went in the direction of the river and they began to develop life along the banks of the river until it culminated in what is today Cairo. And they built the, they would go down the river with barges and so forth and sail those huge stones, cut them out of mountains. I mean, cut them clean. There was no cement, no mortar, no brick, nothing. It was just men, human beings, putting stone on stone. And the stone is so heavy, you couldn't even get a piece of paper between them. These were some real stonemasons. This is craft. And it took years. In fact, the pyramid plateau in Giza, the great pyramid of Khufu, his son Menkaure and Khafre, and then other lesser pyramids of their wives and so forth, over 70-some years to complete those, because when the river receded, it deposited black fertile earth along the banks. And of course, they live near a desert. So when it receded and you have black fertile earth, you better get moving with the agricultural piece. You have to have food. You're on a desert. Developed irrigation and so forth. And so they understood this. So in the northern hemisphere, at this time of year, in charting the sun, they realize around 21st of December, which is the winter solstice, the sun hesitates for 3 days at its lowest point. On the 25th, the third day, the 25th, it begins to now move upward. The sun is born. And even the brightest star, the Sirius star, was bright. We call it the North Star. Then you, and they're followed by the three stars in Orion's belt, which they call the three kings. Everything about the Christmas story about the birth of Jesus is allegory. It's metaphysics. Anthropomorphized. It's not true historically. And the ancient Kemetic people didn't make their, they didn't say that what they were saying was historical, was real. What they did was real. But what motivated them, what instructed them, was based on the myths, based on the stories. And so Constantine, understanding that the December 25th was the birthday of Heru, who the Greeks called Horus. The Greeks called Aser Osiris. The Greeks called Aset, his wife, Isis. The Greeks called their son Horus. But this is where you get the story of the battle of good and evil. If you ever watched the Lion King story, it's the same story. Mufasa is Aser, his wife, and their offspring Simba is Heru, and he fights his evil uncle Scar to avenge his father's death. It's the same, because Set was envious of Aser because everybody wanted to be like Aser. You wanted to live in accordance with the goodness of Aser. And that jealousy and envy, he plotted to kill him, cut him up in 14 pieces, and scattered his body across the Nile. His wife, Aset, and Heru got together to find the pieces of her dead husband, to resurrect him, death and resurrection. She finds every piece but one, his penis. Because supposedly it was eaten by a catfish, as the story goes. His penis. So when you look at the Washington Monument, when you go to cemeteries that are pretty old, when people who have been buried since the whatever, older cemeteries, you see a lot of tekens. That's what it's called. The Greeks call it an obelisk. It's called a teken. You even see pyramids in there. Why? Because those men were Masons. The people who came and took this country, I ain't talking about pilgrims. I ain't talking about Puritans. I'm talking about the Masons. I'm talking about the Caucasian men who believed that they were ordained by God to do what they did and take everything for their benefit. Take it and put their name on it if they felt it was good, or destroyed it if they felt that they couldn't. And so, Auxerre, who now lives in the underworld, he's also called the Lord of the Perfect Black. Many times if you see a depiction of him in the Medunecer, or what the Greeks call hieroglyphs, you see him sometimes painted green because he was also the god of regeneration, of vegetation. And so the Netcher god, Netcher means god, the Netcher Juhudi, which is the head of an ibis bird. This is the god of articulation and speech and science. He comes to Auxerre and says to her, you will have a son. They hold the ox, which is the African symbol of life, which is the oval part is the womb of the woman. The long part at the is the phallus of the man. The cross part is they come together to produce life. They hold the ox to her nose and impregnate her with the son. The son is born. The three kings come to bring gifts, and he's adorned and so forth. Oh, man. I'm telling you, brothers and sisters, this story is thousands of years old. What makes their story historical when we know that ours was not historical? It is metaphoric. But theirs is the same damn story, but they say that theirs is historic, and that's the issue that I have with Christianity. Aside from it being so damn dogmatic. So, that's the problem. But that's where it began with Constantine in 325. That's how Christmas became the birth date of Jesus the Christ. When there's other saviors with the same kind of story, because why? They all took it from the same source, ancient Kemet. They took it from the same source. They're crucified. They stay in there for 3 days and then they ascend. It's the same story. Now, I know, brothers and sisters, who, for those of you who do celebrate the holiday, that it's a good day. It makes you feel good, the holiday season. Beginning with Thanksgiving or bringing the family together. You come from far and wide. Some of you, you sit down and maybe that family situation is beautiful. But I too know that in a capitalistic society, if you don't have the things that you want to have, there's resentment, there's jealousy, there's hurt, there's stress. There's some of us who really go into a debt trying to provide a Christmas. And I know too that for those of who are older, we always say what Christmas is. Christmas is for the children. Christmas is for children. And I know that some of us don't want, we'll go through the charade and then later we'll say, you know, hey, I was lying to you. There ain't no Santa Claus. I bought it. You know, I don't know what age that is, because there's some kids who are who are grown still talking about some Santa Claus, you know. Santa Claus goes straight to the ghetto, you know, and say that this is what I want. But just like these commercials, you know, I think they just started having commercials, car commercials and big sales on cars for about 20 years now, I think it is, you know. Because I'm saying, like, man, you know, having a car, you know, around Christmas time, a $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 car, man, it's a hell of a purchase there for, just for Christmas, you know. But, of course, there are people who in this society that make money like that, that have money like that. It ain't us. In fact, the reality is when you talk about a middle class, when the Caucasians make a reference to a middle class, they definitely ain't talking about us. Their middle class is well over 100 something, about $125,000. Our middle class is about 70, 80. So you can see there's like about a $50,000 difference or more. So when they have these commercials for Lexus and all these Mercedes and all these other cars, and be like, damn, for Christmas. But what it is, of course, it is not. And that's, to me, is the part, just like everything else in a society where they need to be real. They need to be factual. They need to be truthful. They need to be truthful for the 9/11 situation. They need to be truthful for all the other things that they keep in a secret, or how they manipulate the minds of the people. And they feed you this. Give me a call and join this conversation. 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Join this conversation. The second half of the program, we're going to talk about Kwanzaa and how important Kwanzaa is, and to be instill those principles into our everyday life. That's necessary. Because, I mean, even here with Christmas, I would hope that when you feel around this time of year to be more loving, more giving, more willing to be more to your fellow man, more considerate, I would hope that you would feel that way throughout the year as opposed to just at this time. Well, you see, I don't know, you know, I watch the news pretty much all the time, you know, and there was been a big emphasis on saying Merry Christmas, Christmas this, Christmas that. Not too much of the Jesus peace that I observe, definitely more of the Santa Claus peace from what I observed, you know. Definitely the push for gift giving and gift getting, which of course is the main thing around Christmas, brothers and sisters. It is a commercial holiday. It is the commercial holiday in the Western world. Even though Christmas is celebrated globally, I saw a picture of some children. I can't remember what country it was. I just kind of, and they had their little Santa Claus hats on and so forth. You know, my contention is, if that's what y'all want to believe, y'all go ahead. What I hate about what Caucasians have done is that they've imposed their culture, their traditions, their religion on other people. And they didn't do it to save our souls. I don't know if you've been checking your Facebook page. It's a nice piece that says, you know, when Caucasians began to understand, well, let's give them this religion.
This call is being recorded.
You know, they didn't do that to save our souls. They did that to make us docile. They did that so we could be more compliant. Also, too, that giving us the idea that their rule is ordained by God. And the image, and they're in the image of God. But yet they have impounded us with, or impacted us with, or made us believe that, you know, worshiping this or believing in this, that even though our situation here in this physical world and this physical life is a hell, but we'll go to heaven. They don't believe it, and shown the hell we shouldn't believe it. But we do. But we do. So I know it's very difficult for us. We got a caller. I've been asking for a caller. All right, area code 267. You're at African Perspectives. Good morning.
Hey, good day. Good day, Brother Oshie. How are you?
Hey, Brother Ralph, how are you today, man?
I'm fine, man. I'm just called in to let you know that I am listening. I heard you on Friday when you said you have a live program today. I'm off, you know, free from the plantation. So I said, let me go on ahead and cut my man on, man, just to see what you're talking about, seeing how you're enlightening the people, because you really are.
Well, I try my best to. But,
yes, sir. Now, Brother Oshie, we were discussing on Friday when I called in to your guest, Kwanzaa, and I bought that.
Ralph, you still there? Ralph, are you still there? Well,
last week.
Right, go ahead.
Now, I'm looking at the seven principles, unity. Brother Oshie, I didn't have to know Kwanzaa to know that that's what we're supposed to do. You know, and I'm just talking about myself, brother. The second one, self-determination, you know, to be responsible for ourselves and to create your own destiny. You know, a lot of us got mad at that Uncle Tom when he told us to pull yourself up from your own bootstraps. But I said, like, you know what? You can hurt my feelings, but you know what? That's what we're going to have to do. But a lot of people, you know, criticize that one statement. But deep down, I knew that's what we had to do. So, brothers, I'm not saying I disagree with Kwanzaa. I'm not saying that, you know, anything against, but some of the stuff we should already know. You know what I mean? And I'm just talking about me, Brother Oshie. Mm-hmm. Some of us need to be taught these things. I've always thought in a strong community. But first, we have to have willing participants, you know, to build that strong community.
Right.
So, no, I've always, I believe, you know, I believe a lot of this stuff. I don't believe if you have a successful life that you just keep it all to yourself and build your own ego. No, that success was given to you by the Creator to show others and to give to others, to let them know, like, there's a way out of this dilemma that we're facing. Now, I'm going to look at this other, and I'm going to call it by the Swahili names, too. You had, right here, you have, Ujima, you have Umoja is the first one. That's unity.
Right.
Kuka Jakalia, I believe that's how you put
right.
Pronounce that.
It's pronounced Kuji Chakalia.
Kuji
Chakalia.
Chakalia.
It is.
Self-determination. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I agree with both of those. I'm into it wholeheartedly. Ujima, collective work and responsibility to build and maintain your community, to work together, to help one another. I mean, do we have to celebrate that, or should we be practicing that, Brother Oshie? And that's my whole argument.
Well, all of these things, Brother Ralph, were designed to be instilled into our everyday life. Imagine if we thought and practiced unity, thought and practiced self-determination, collective work and responsibility within your community and within your family. There's a project that needs to be done. So let's say it's restructuring the house. You all get together to make
right.
it happen in family, you know? And then, of course,
right.
there's Ujamaa, cooperative economics. That means that we're going to spend some money with ourselves. We're going to circulate money within our community. We're going to support businesses that support our community. And it ain't about getting the individual rich, because it's collect,
right.
you know, it I mean, developing co-ops, pulling our resources together to own the businesses. I mean, shouldn't we not want to control the economics in our community? Of course we should. Should Koreans and those outside our community, Pakistanians, Arabs, Indians, be having a business in our community? And then when they have those businesses in our community, they take the money out and they live way outside. They live in the suburbs. You know,
not only that, Brother Oshie, they sell you slop.
Yes.
So, you know, they sell
yes.
you slop.
They,
so,
They sell you stuff that they wouldn't eat. They sell you stuff that don't that they wouldn't do. I never forget there was a Muslim store. I thought it was a Muslim store. No, it was a community store because they sold cigarettes, they sold alcohol, and they sold it to our kids.
Right.
You know?
They sell them a single cigarette.
Yeah.
But yet they go and pray. Yet they go pray five times a day to their God.
Exactly.
But yet they sell our people anything.
Anything.
Brother Oshie, that's the problem I have, man. And I'm just looking at purpose to restore African people to their traditional greatness. That's what you're trying to do every
right.
program you're on.
That's what I'm trying
air.
To do, brother. You're right. You're right.
You know what I mean? So we don't need to have a special day to celebrate. Let's just practice them. Let's make these things practical, man.
Yeah.
And that's my argument. That's my whole argument. Now, people want to turn this into a commercial celebration and do all that. More power to them. But you know what? Once we make these traditions practical, brother, you know, I mean, there's no stopping us.
Right.
So, no, I agree with Kwanzaa because I understand it now.
Right.
I'm going to continue researching it. But once I start seeing those seven principles, I said, man, ain't this common sense?
Well, you know how it is, Brother Ralph. Common sense ain't too common, is it? You know?
Yes, sir.
But you know, also, too, when you look at the creativity, Kumba, creativity, and we're not talking about just the creativity that I just mentioned when I was at the beginning of the program, when I talked about ancient Kemetic society, when they created those temples and tombs and pyramids and all these other creative things that they've done, that we have done. Not just that. But to create not just the creativity of Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, and LeBron James, or singer or dancer, creativity in terms of what is best for human beings, what is best for society. Let us think
exactly.
And come up with ways to where we can all live and love freely. These are the kind of creative ideas. Because even in spite, Brother Ralph, and you know, even in spite of our enslavement, and even in spite of segregation and miseducation, we have done some tremendous things. We have created some tremendous things. We have been some great inventors, even to this day. Even to this day. So you see, that creativity is innate within us. But of course, it has to be nurtured, it has to be cultivated, it has to be promoted, it has to be encouraged. And a lot of times, because of this society, how racist and dogmatic it is suppressed, you see. So
right.
then that
right.
creativity, then of course the last one is Imani, faith. But not just a faith in God or an entity or being outside of you, but a faith in yourself. A belief in who you are. Exactly. A faith in yourself and who we are, you know?
Right.
So, yeah.
Brother Oshie, I'm going to let you go because I know other callers probably called this. But look, that Kuji Chakolia, I almost got it right.
You got it, brother.
To be responsible for ourselves. That's one of the most, man, if we could get that concept.
Right.
Like, it's not about what other people are bringing. It's what we bring to the table. If we could get that concept, Brother Oshie, man, I tell you, we'll be a powerful people. And that's where that last principle comes in, that faith. I believe once we get those things together, because I believe they are coming together,
yeah.
They got to get better before they get worse. I've never seen our communities where they are now. I mean, it's a nightmare when I look at some of our communities.
Yeah.
And our people standing outside those nasty Chinese stores, lines, waiting for that nasty man,
yeah.
I've never seen us in this position.
I'm
going to
tell you.
Man. So,
and it's like,
brother,
that,
I just had to call in and say, you know, have a safe Kwanzaa, you and your, I'm going to say Kwanzaa now. Have a safe Kwanzaa for you and your family, man. And may the blessings be on you, man. And I really appreciate you trying to free up the minds of our people.
Ashe, you know? I appreciate that, Brother Ralph. Thank you, man. Thank you so much.
Yes,
brother.
Sir. So I'll hang up and I'll continue to listen, man.
All right, right
Talk
on.
To you later, brother.
Peace, my brother.
Peace.
Have a blessed day, man. I appreciate Brother Ralph. Brother Ralph is the reason why we're on Time for an Awakening Radio, and he was calling me when I was on Blog Talk. So I appreciate Ralph and all the other callers. We got another caller, 414 caller, 414.
Well, good morning, Rich.
Hey, man, Brother Jeff, my main
How
man.
How you doing, my brother?
My main man, my main technician.
Well, I just like to let Brother Ralph know, don't go nowhere. This is the discussion. This is family. This is what we're going to do. We're going to practice human nature.
Yeah.
All of what we're getting, kind of get back to, is what was taken, what was stolen, what was twisted. And we got what we was given. We didn't get us here. But it's our responsibility to get us out of it.
That's right. And Brother Ralph,
what Brother Ralph said, Brother Ralph, you only seen what most people now start to see. This is what I saw when I saw it. It felt right to me when I heard the seven principles of Maat. That felt like I was at home. That's who we are as African people. That's what's been destroyed. We have it. Now we need to practice it. We need to live it. We need to breathe it. We need to do everything in regards to redeeming ourselves, because we have every human right to be here. And when people start denying you that right, that's where the problem is. So let's reclaim who we are. Let's do that.
Yeah.
And we can move on in this society.
Right on, Brother Jeff. Reclaim our Africanness. Yeah. Be who we are. And you're right. And you're definitely right. We didn't get ourselves in this, and we've been in it a while. But the bottom line, it is our responsibility to get ourselves out of it. All right, Brother Jeff. We got.
And that's why I'm going to be forever indebted and appreciating you, because you have that passion to display it, to let people know that it's our responsibility, nobody else's. So keep doing what you're doing, bro, and I'm going to always be there to support you.
I appreciate it, Brother Jeff. Stay on the line with me, okay? We have another caller. Sure. 602. Good morning.
Yes,
Brother Marcus.
Good morning, Brother Marcus.
Good morning, dear brother. How are you this morning?
I'm doing all right,
good
brother.
Good.
You know, years ago, I went to a forum by Dr. Feller, Jack Feller. They noted biology. He was a biochemist, I think. And he said, should African people celebrate Europe? Hello?
Hey, Ralph?
Hello?
Brother Ralph?
I'm sorry, I got to mute somebody. Okay, go ahead, Marcus.
Yes. So I was saying, years ago, I went to a forum by Dr. Jack Felder, a noted biochemist. And the forum was entitled, Should African People Celebrate European Holidays? And, you know, slavery wasn't the destruction of the body. It was the destruction of the mind. And unless we confront, you know, the psychological damage that was done to the black mind from the experience of slavery, we're going to be running on a treadmill, because that is the problem. Our people's, you know, I heard Dr. Amos Wilson said, he said, our people's minds have been totally reversed, psychologically reversed. I even hear you said, he said, if black people were birds in America, we would be flying backwards.
Yeah.
You see, because again, the damage that was done to the black mind has never been addressed on a whole scale level. You know, so we really have to begin to address that problem. Even the program yesterday was talking about Du Bois and Garvey, you know, and even Du Bois mentioned it, although Du Bois was a big adversary of Garvey. He mentioned the dual personality in the black people created from the system. You have two personalities in the one black body.
Exactly.
So, you know, that give us split loyalty, you know. So we really, really have to address, you know, I saw something that really sickened me the other day, what they're going on within Zimbabwe.
Oh,
now they gave back one of the white farmer, the first white farmer, they gave him the land, his land back. And the black people were really happy and kissing this, you know. And
I got it, made me sick. Hey, Marcus, that was very hard for me to watch. extremely difficult for me to watch, to see all those brothers and sisters just running up to these Caucasians, these two Caucasian men, just literally just hugging and worshiping. I'm like, God, you know, and then, of course, the president said that not only are we going to give some land back to the Caucasians, but we're also going to petition to be once again a part of the British Commonwealth. I'm like, you
You know, I watch that word. I mean, Jamaica is a part.
They put it out this way.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Jamaica is a part of the British Commonwealth, and Jamaica is catching hell in England.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're supposed to be a part of the British Commonwealth, you should be able to fly, go to England without a visa. No, you got to get a visa to come in.
Of course.
It's sickening, man. It's sickening, you know, and I really don't know what it's going to take for our people to understand that these white folks ain't our friends. I don't know, Brother Oshie. I really see. But that really turned my stomach when I see they're doing that in Zimbabwe. But, yeah. You know, Brother Oshie, keep on doing what you're doing. Because again, you know, it is Garveyism and African nationalism is going to be the solution for our people. Pan-Africanism are dead, as you said.
Anyway, either we do that.
Care, brother. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Brother Marcus. You have a blessed and wonderful day, my brother. Peace to you and happy Kwanzaa. You, let me just say
yes,
this,
please,
right on, because Marcus is always on point, and I know he says it pretty much all the time, and I agree. We must embrace this. Dr. Clark said the real thing for us to embrace a dynamic Pan-Africanism, it is going to be technical, it is going to be cultural, and it's going to be spiritual. A dynamic Pan-Africanism that speaks to the heart and soul of African people to be self-determining. I say all the time that this program deals with independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. Because based upon my understanding of what our ancestors have brought us and our contemporaries, men and women who I have read and listened to and gone across the country to hear, this is what they've said. This is the rationale and the understanding for our very survival, because we are in a situation with, although we may think Caucasians are just as human as that we are, okay, damn it, they're human, but they're not human in their mindset. Every function, basically, that they do, we do. But there's a difference in their evolutionary development that causes them to be very sexist, racist, greedy, selfish, narcissistic, you name it. That's why, to me, Trump is who he is. And yet the Caucasian people recognize who he is because that's who they are. It wasn't no mistake. So we're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we'll talk about a little bit more of this. Join us in the conversation. We'll talk a little bit more about this, as well as talk about Kwanzaa and the importance of the Kwanzaa celebration. Kwanzaa begins tomorrow, December 26th to January 1st. I'm not sure the Kwanzaa celebrations in your particular locale. Please research them, seek them out. If there is no community-wide Kwanzaa celebration, have one at the crib. Bring some people over. Maybe you don't have the setup. We'll talk about that when we come back. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Brothers and sisters, stay right here with us. We're going to be right back.
Habarigani, Habarigani, Kwanzaa. Oh yeah.
feel the joy as we sing of the love togetherness can surely bring
emotion.
Set the table, no matter strong, thankful for the first fruits of the year. Stay a light a candle just for you. Come join the party, it's a celebration. Karamu at Kwanzaa time of year. Red and yellow, black or white, your world is alright. It's a celebration that should last throughout the year.
Happy Kwanzaa.
Happy Kwanzaa.
Together there is much we can do.
All right.
Happy Kwanzaa.
Together there is so much we can do. Happy Kwanzaa.
Together there is much we can do.
All right.
Happy Kwanzaa.
It's a celebration. Remembering times of old. Tradition is the food that fills our souls. Yes, it does. Still the children are the future of all our hopes and dreams. Let's teach them well. Let's teach them well. Come join the party, it's a celebration. Karamu at Kwanzaa time of the year. Red and yellow, black or white, yo, it's alright. It's a celebration that will last throughout the year.
Happy Kwanzaa.
Happy Kwanzaa. Alright. Happy Kwanzaa.
Together there is so much we can do.
Together there is so much we can do. Happy, 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 happy Kwanzaa. So many ways to show I love you. See, I have faith in all that we do. But we gotta stay together. Just a few of the principles that help us.
Starts at 8, that's when we get praise to the man upstairs for another blessed day. I give hugs to my moms, my dad and my sis. You smell that? I run to see what moms cook.
While we drink from the cup of togetherness, it's that part of the year that you don't want to miss. I give a gift from the heart so you know it's true. So recite a principle and tell me what it means to you.
Faith.
Determination. Work together.
But we've gotta work together.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. I'm here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. All the times I'm going to give to you on our programming list are Eastern Times. On Wednesdays, it is Revive with Sister POC at 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. On Thursday evening, it's us lifting us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people, in the spirit of Ujamaa, cooperative economics, as we like to call it, family-centered economics. And that's from 9 p.m. to 11, us lifting us. On Fridays, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern Time, it's time for an awakening with Brother Richard and Brother Elliot. On Saturdays, SST, that's Saturday Sports Talk with your host, Troy Wilmore, from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then Saturday evening, early evening, is Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank, from 4 to 6 p.m. And then on Sundays, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, it is Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening at 7 p.m., once again, it is time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Sister Marimba Ani sent me a piece. I'm going to get this call. We got a caller hanging on. I don't want to leave a caller hanging on like that. Area code 215. Go ahead, caller. How you doing?
Hey, Brother Oshie. How you doing, good brother?
I'm doing fine, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. All praise be to Allah. You know, Brother Oshie, I want to first thank you. I appreciate your comments last night on Time from the Awakening. We was on with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard.
Yeah, that was
night.
A good your program last
very
night.
Very insightful.
Yeah, that was a good program last night they had last night.
Yes, it was. Yes,
the
it was.
From Oakland.
And you know, Brother Oshie, it gives me such honor to follow a dedicated brother like Brother Marcus, because when y'all talk just now, y'all echo many of my sentiments when you was talking about how our people's already running to them two Caucasians, hugging and kissing and crying. It made me think when I was in Jamaica several years ago, Brother Oshie, when that old hag died, Margaret the Witch Thatcher and stuff. Yeah, Jamaicans out there openly crying. I said, they crying for that racist hussy.
Man.
I mean, it really hurt my spirit to see that. But one thing that made me feel good when I was over there, not all of our Jamaican sisters and brothers was like that. Yeah, some brothers and sisters, they say right on Jamaican TV, or they say that hag should have been dead years ago and stuff. But, you know, you always got some of our people that's just so confused and suffer from self-hatred. They love their open enemy and stuff like that because, as I said on Terrestrial Radio here in Philadelphia, Brother Oshie, I said, them Negroes, I said, here, Brother Mugabe, gave your land back and stuff like that. You knew the devils, these European devils, was putting sanctions on him for doing that. I said, since you're working with the man, you hear this man giving your land back that he gave, rightfully gave back to you as the inhabitants of the land and stuff. You're going to fight the man. You're going to help deal with these crackers, get him out of office and stuff. Now you're running over to kissing them Caucasians because they want to get a land back to them devils and stuff like that. I said, here the man gave you a foothold to try to get for self-determination, and you so dumb and you don't even dig it, you know? I mean, it's just so sad our people, Brother Oshie, that mindset where they got to have a white man over top of them with his foot up there behind. They're not satisfied till the white man got his foot up there behind.
Yeah.
That slave or Uncle Tom slave mentality. Same thing in Libya. Gaddafi did all this stuff he did for our people, and you had Negroes running over there happy that the criminal Barack Obama and his ilk, Hillary Clinton and her ilk and France and Britain helped kill and conspire to kill that brother. They just happened they can they happen to be slaves. They let a white man's foot up there behind, Brother Oshie. It's sad. Even in South Africa right now, Brother Oshie.
Yeah.
I was reading the final call. You got at the post-apartheid, after Mandela been president, President Zuma, all these people, black folks still living in shanty shacks and stuff over there now.
Yes.
With all the wealth over there.
Yes.
I mean when is this madness going to stop, Brother Oshie? When is this going to stop?
I think when it stops, brother, is the time that we, as African people, make the declaration that we are an African people. That's the first thing. It may seem like a very simple thing, but it's very difficult because of how messed up our minds are. But if we can say that we are an African people and we are one on the continent throughout the diaspora, we are Africans. Then now once that happens and we firmly embrace that and believe that, now it's easier for us to come together with Africans on the continent, where the resources are, where the riches are, and Africans in the diaspora. Those Africans in the diaspora, if you have gained knowledge and skills and whatever area those are in, it ain't for you to go beg crackers for a job. What that is
right.
for you to take those skills and go to Africa and build cities, towns, roads, highways, ports, hospitals, schools. Eliminate the boundaries. I ain't saying that you should get rid of your nation status. Keep your nation status if you are Fulani, if you are Zulu or whatever. Keep your nation status. But remember, above all, is we are African. It is not because you are a particular nation status, you're better than anybody else. No. What it is that that's your cultural group. Y'all practice those traditions, but don't impose them on anybody. That's what y'all do. But what's most paramount is that you believe that we are an African people and we must do for ourselves. Africa Africa can feed itself. Like right now, I saw another piece on South Africa where there's issues about water. They're having serious problems with water because they've been having an extended long period of drought. Now, one thing that I know is that there is enough water, there's enough arid, usable land that Africa does not have to go hungry. Africa does not have to have issues about thirst or anything like that. Africa could be self-sufficient if African people managed the land right and all of the resources. That's all it takes. And so really
giving them corrupt leadership. That's exactly. Like giving them handkerchief head corrupt Negroes over there.
That's what it is.
That's what we'll take, Brother Oshie. Because like I said, as long as you got them Negroes that's beholden the white folks that want to keep their head in England and the United States behind, the people over there and throughout the African will never see the greatness and see the wealth and food and quality of life they deserve. As long as you got them kind of Negroes over there that want to keep their head up the white man's behind, man.
Yeah.
It's really sad that these niggas here in 2017, you got Negroes still happy with the white man keeping his foot on their neck. They happy being a slave. They like a happy slave and stuff, man.
Well, you got to understand, brother, that the psychological warfare, the whitewashing of us and our minds has been an ongoing, continuous process. And only those of us who are able to truly step outside of the imposed boundaries that Caucasians have placed us in, or who are able to release that vice grip that they have on our minds and understand that tool. Once you set the vice grip, which is what they have done, then you're a controller of that mind. And the only way to release that vice grip is that little knob at the end of the handle. Turning that knob is symbolic of inquiring knowledge of self.
Yes, it is.
That's the only way that you'll be able to release that vice grip is once you gain consciousness, knowledge of self, a belief in who we are, a respect of who we are, our struggle as African people, and then say to yourself and those who are around you, or your family members, your community, never again.
I ain't gonna believe
a damn thing. I don't believe a damn thing crackers say.
I don't need to, Brother Oshie. and you know, Brother Oshie, I ain't gonna interrupt you, but you know, you made an excellent point. You didn't speak from a hateful, you spoke from a historical truth about white people's nation, stuff like that. Like you said, sure, they Herman Bans in the sense of Herman Form, but they don't think like Herman Bans. And like you said, Donald Trump is white, no mistake and stuff. White folks, where black folks got played at. See, white folks, a lot of times in these jobs, they told our people, sisters and brothers, oh, I wouldn't vote for that fool. But they know damn well when they went to the poll, they was gonna vote for Trump, because Trump is them. They are Trump. So when they went to the polls, they told black folks on the job they wasn't going to vote for Trump, but when they went on voting pools, the white men and white women voted for Donald Trump, because that's who they are. They Trump is, like you say, he embodies their mentality.
That's right.
You know?
He does.
And it's no mistake, and we don't understand. See, that's where we missed the boat at, O.C. We don't understand that.
No, we don't. You know? No, we don't, because really, even though we have been violent and hateful towards each other because we've been trained to be, we are a peace-loving people by our very nature.
Right.
That's who we are. When others came into Africa, even in ancient times, in ancient Kemet, we didn't kick them to the curb. We didn't dog them out. And we didn't go anywhere else, take anybody else's stuff. We just wanted to maintain, to make sure that we had ours. And we welcomed you in, because that's the kind of people we were. We didn't understand that we brought these folks in, and then they told us to close our eyes and pray. They gave us the Bible. We opened our eyes. They got the land. Now we got the Bible. And now you see you see all that madness going on in Africa. Man, when I was in Ghana, when the first times I went to Ghana, it would sicken me to see these posters of a Caucasian Jesus. The image of Jesus that Western society has been perpetuating for centuries. To see that. And then, of course, three of the top three of the top preachers, Christian preachers in the world, money-making preachers. In that top, Creflo Dollar ain't in it. T.D. Jakes ain't in it. He ain't in it. But there are three Nigerians who are in that top. Can you imagine kind of, every time, I'm talking about millions, tens of millions of dollars that they get.
And people live in abject poverty.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, see, that's what I'm saying, brother. See, this is the madness that got the stuff to these Negroes like that. And it's like that in Africa, and it's like that here in America. These Negroes, whether they've been in the clergy community or the political community, I'm talking about black leadership on the state, federal, local, these Negroes have got to be ostracized. Because as long as, and I said that last night in Richard, as long as we keep on, you know, voting for these people, supporting them, our conditions will never change. We'll be in this rut forever. We need new leadership, people that's about love our people, that's not out there trying to cater to white folks, trying to play both ends against the middle. We need true revolutionary sisters and brothers in office if we're going to deal with this political and religious thing. We need good sisters and brothers out there that really care about our people, that's unashamedly black and
exactly.
African, man. We can't have Negroes up there telling us, well, I'm for like Obama, I'm for everybody. See, we the only ones, as you know, but you got to say that, fool. You don't hear Donald Trump say he's president for all the people. But as soon as that Negro Obama was in there, first thing these Negroes said, well, you can't expect Obama to be president for black people. He's for everybody. But yet, everybody got something from him except black people. The
except
ones that
us.
Voted from 90% start, Jews
yep.
got something, gays
yep.
got something, lesbians got everybody except black people.
Exactly.
So we play ourselves out of position. Look down in Alabama, same thing. Black women, 98% of black women voted for Doug Jones to keep that cracker Roy Moore out of office. 96% of think a black men voted for him. But what do you hear the Democrat Party and Doug Jones saying now? They still trying to get back the white vote. They want to go after the white Reagan, so-called Reagan Democrats and stuff like that. We always get played every time.
Every
I get
time.
Sick of this foolishness, man.
Every time, man.
You know?
Yes, sir. I appreciate
the
call,
thank
man.
Thank you for your time, bro.
Always, man. You're always welcome. I appreciate you, my brother. Continue.
I appreciate you, brother. You keep up the good work, man. And may the credit bless you, brother. Keep the fire and your spirit going, because we need brothers like you on the front line, brother Oshie.
All right, now, brother. Peace to you. Have a blessed and wonderful day.
Peace and blessings.
Peace.
You do the same, brother Oshie.
Happy Kwanzaa. We have another caller. 646. 646.
Hotep, brother Oshie.
Oh, man.
Hotep, brother Oshie.
Hotep, dear brother. How are you?
I'm very good. Happy Kwanzaa to you.
You too, Brother Jay. Happy Kwanzaa, man.
Audience. You know, we have to stop putting sole blame on that cracker Donald Trump. He's just a figurehead to a much bigger movement. And that much bigger movement is them lobbyists and them senators and those Congress who go along with this nonsense. That basically put forth this destruction. That man ain't smart enough to be able to do what he's done in regards to this tax bill and some of the other things that are in play. If you notice with other legislation that fool has put forward in regards to so-called Obamacare, Affordable Care Act, that didn't go through when you had members of the Senate and the Congress who stand up and acted accordingly. The lobbyists basically paid off these senators and these Congress people to do what they have done, and they must be punished for this. Now, the bottom line is the cracker won his damn country back. And you know something, to be honest with you, I'm not going to be mad at the cracker for wanting his country back. It's just like me being mad at the Native Americans for wanting they land back. If anybody, they should have the land ahead of us and anybody else. Mm-hmm. So when the cracker goes about the business of doing his thing, we should be going about the business of doing our thing, getting our act together and move it home with bomb. Mm-hmm. But no, we want to be under the tit of this bastard to the dying day. We don't want to collectively come together, build, and do the necessary thing. We want to be a part of some equation which we were brutally forced to build. So I don't want to hear that BS about we built this country. No, your black ass was forced to build this
right.
country. If you had any sense, you
right.
would realize that. But you don't want to realize that, because then it makes you have to look inward and say, well, damn, if somebody done mistreated me from day one, forced me to do this and do that, why am I so embedded to this BS?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Jay.
But we don't want to look at it that way because we define ourselves as so-called American. You ain't no damn American. You still a slave. No. Whenever they want to make a move on you, what do? They make a move on you. Now, here it is. The cracker just used you whenever he deems it necessary. All of these Negroes went out there and voted for this Doug Jones in Alabama.
Right.
Put this cracker in office. And now what is the cracker going to do? The cracker ain't going to give you a damn thing. The cracker ain't going to do nothing whatsoever to help you have any form of governance, to be a part of governance. You know what I mean? But you went out there and digitally put him in the position to do what? To be your overseer, like he's always been. You know, I mean, at what point in time are we going to stand up, wake up, and do for self and realize that this white man is no damn good?
We need your enemy. We need a cadre of leadership that is truly global, a global cadre of leadership, because all around the world, African people are despised. We have no friends. African people must turn inward. No place. No place. And so we need a leadership that has the courage, the commitment, the tenacity to come together to develop the plan for African people to run Africa. I ain't talking about here. We will never, you know, I was part of Republic of New Africa back in the 60s, went to a few meetings. I understood it. I mean, the Black Panther Party. I've been involved politically, you know, at least consciously, for 30, 40 years of my adult life, you know? And I believed, you know, that all of some things were possible. Then as I got older and began to understand the situation deeper, when I began to listen to Dr. Marima Ani and read her book, Urugu, when I began to look at Dr. Amos Wilson and Naeem Akbar, you know, and all the other psychologists, Dr. Bobby Wright. Dr. Bobby Wright's essay, Psychopathic Racial Personality, should be read and understood by us clearly because he states that everything these crackers are doing is genocidal to us in nature. Everything.
Totally.
In fact, the reality is here in this country, we are, our population is diminishing. That should be a cause for concern, but none of our leaders are talking about it. We were at 17%. We were at 17%, Jay. Now we're at like 13% or even lower. Why? Mass incarceration, homosexuality, our messed up minds where brothers don't want to be with a sister, drug addiction, all kinds of abuse, substance abuse, and a lot of them just plain ain't about nothing. So you see the situation, and yet our lack of leadership. The only thing our leadership wants to do is, can we get some more people in the House of Representatives? Can we get a congressperson?
Yes.
Can we get a governor? God, man, I'm going to start to cuss,
brother.
What is
that going to do?
Not a damn thing. Not a damn thing.
They're not going to be able to put forward no agenda. They're not going to be able to put forward no laws. They're not going to be able to do anything whatsoever to make the quality of our lives better.
No.
They're not going to be able to do anything.
No.
They just go in there and give their vote to our oppression.
It is.
And then say that they're doing something. These Negroes can't even get paid for what they give this cracker. You give votes to this cracker, you give this and that to this cracker, and they don't even pay you to bring your people out. But you freely giveth of yourself
right to
this cracker. But you know, we also got Negroes like this Umar Johnson. Now, I don't understand why our people can't just come to the conclusion and accept the fact that Umar Johnson is a fraud. The man is a fraud. He has decent intentions, but the honest fact of the matter is he's a fraud.
Well, you know, I'm a defender of Dr. Umar Johnson. I've known him.
Defending what? What are you defending?
Let me say this. I brought him to Milwaukee a couple of times. Me and another sister. I've known him. In fact, at one time when we brought him, I went to Chicago to pick him up. You know, so I know Umar Johnson. He knows me. He's going to be here in Atlanta on Thursday. But let me say this, because I don't know if you listened to the program I did back about a few months ago when a lot of this information came to light about him. And I read some of the things that were said, and what I expressed was a dissatisfaction with Dr. Umar Johnson not being upfront, not being transparent. Because if you're out there and put out front, now granted, okay, he's a man and he had sex with some women. They're grown, and as long as it was consensual, that's their business. But once it becomes public, you don't put that out there. Your credibility now and is shot. And then, of course, the tete-a-tete he had with Saru Seti. That was ugly.
Comedy.
Yeah. Oh, it was terrible.
That was absolutely nothing more than blatant comedy. That's all it was. See, the point is, he fulfills a service, and his service is to entertain and captivate the Negro with his emotion. Let's just be honest about it, serious.
Well, that's the same
thing. We have a thing for being emotionally uplifted by charlatan. Same thing with Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, and the rest of them.
Right. And
you treat a good thing, and they got you.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the same thing with it. But Jay, it's the same thing with Mr. Farrakhan. People are enamored by. Go ahead.
I'm not going to say anything because your boy at 205 will get on me. He's another con man too on the highest level. Because my position is this. He always makes the analogy separation or else, and this is the thing that I don't think our people really look at and really don't catch on things that people say and what their intentions are. He says separation or else, but he asks the oppressor to give him something, to give him land.
Right.
But in the process, over these 50-some years or longer that the nation has been in existence, why haven't they done the necessary things to separate?
Mm-hmm.
How much land do they own? Where have they gone to a state and tried to identify their position and gain a hold of it? Most of them are employed by the oppressor. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
They're in a situation to where as we start to think and feel as though the oppressor is obligated to give us something for what he has done to us as a people. And it ain't, and that's just not going to happen. So you're not really about separation as you claim to be, because over the last years, you should have been in the position to do that. And on top of that, if Farrakhan was any type of threat to the daddy, the daddy would have killed his ass and got rid of him by now.
That's
so
true.
Let's stop playing a game about he's some sort of threat. Because those that was a threat to the daddy, what have they done? They've eliminated him.
Mm-hmm.
They're not here no more. And we got men who are real men languishing in prison for the last 50 years because of the work that they tried to do.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, you know, you could go and draw audiences and you could say all of these slick talking things and make the white man think that you're going to do something, but you know something. If they really think that you was about it, they would do what? They would pick you behind up. Like I think they've done some brothers out there in Kansas City, Texas. What is this? Identify the Black Radical something? I forgot the name of it, but it's this thing that they have where they're identifying Black Radicals or, you know, people who are a threat to the state. And from my understanding, they had some brothers out there in Texas that had a gun club, and they went out there and they arrested them.
What?
Yes, brother. Yes. Yes.
It ain't nothing. Yes. Hey, Brother Jay, nothing ever surprises me or anything this Caucasian would do or say to maintain their position of dominance and control, because that's who they are. But I know that gun clubs are legal, and I know that the Huey P. Newton gun club is in Texas, I think in the Houston or Dallas area.
I think that's who it is.
Because that's one of the biggest gun clubs in this country for American African people, you know.
They arrested the head of it, and from my understanding, he's in jail under that new thing, Black Identity, what you call them? Something like that.
Right, Black Identity Extremists.
Not knowing it, but it's that program that they was talking about that Sessions and them put together.
Right.
It seems like they arrested him in, what you call them?
Yeah, Black Identity Extremists.
They arrested him in Texas.
Yeah.
Yeah, they arrested him and they put him, they got him in jail right now. So that just goes to show, man, people who are real threats to this Urugu, he will deal with them. And we're not in no position whatsoever, none whatsoever, to chastise this Urugu, to really protest against this Urugu, and damn near do anything to this Urugu.
No, at this time, no, you're right. No, you're right.
Because we're not in no position. Because the bottom line is, Brother Ochi, if we're going to be honest, we don't even have ownership of a community. We aren't even able to feed ourselves.
Let me say this to you, Jay. Jay, let me say this to you.
To do nothing.
No, and you're right. There is not one community in this country that is ours like we had it back.
Could you say that again?
There is not one community in this country that is solely ours, like we had it at Black Wall Street or Tulsa, Oklahoma, Lane, Arkansas, Rosewood, you know, Allentown in California. There is not one. When the Caucasian destroyed them.
You can't say that about other nationalities.
No, you can't. Because in those communities, they run the shops and the businesses.
Yes.
Even though some of them may live there, they may, because they became rich because they're attached real close to our community. And we support them because we sure as hell unfortunately don't support our own. And so then they have the opportunity to continue those businesses and let them grow, you know. And so for me, the idea of us doing something here, I think that we have to understand and look at history, because if you don't look at the history, it is a pathological denial of the reality and the history that it has shown you that we are in. Not that we're incapable, because we could do anything, but we are in the midst. We are in the midst of a sworn and open enemy. Of people who have no regard and no respect for us. And will do whatever they feel is necessary to us. So the idea of the Republic of New Africa and the idea of the Nation of Islam getting some southern states and saying that we are going to be sovereign, hell, crackers can't be sovereign here. Look what happened in Oregon and in Washington a couple years ago. No.
Yep.
This country is run by the cracker with eminent domain. Even in the areas where they put indigenous people, native people, if they want to go do something, they'll just go do it. They don't give a damn. Look what happened in Standing Rock. When the cracker told the Dakota Pipeline said, we don't want you to put that pipeline through Bismarck, South Dakota. We don't want you to put this there. And so what they say, well, hey, the only way we can then put it in is go through the Native Americans territory. And they just did it. They just did it.
Well,
and then, of course,
all
then
I can say,
go ahead.
Go ahead, don't you finish.
No. What I was going to say then, you didn't hear a damn thing about that. All the way up until December of last year, when finally Barack Obama got involved. Because why? They were hitting the people with water cannon. You had all the nations, the indigenous Native American nations come together to protest that, along with other good-minded people to go there and help them protest that. And until they started hitting them with water cannon and rubber bullets, then you got the United States government involved, and then they stopped the pipeline. But then what happened? Trump got elected, and the CEO of the pipeline said, it's on now. We're going to go ahead and do it. And they've done it. So it is whatever they want to do. That's why I keep saying for us, we have every right to claim our sovereignty. We have every right. We don't have to ask the damn UN or anybody else. All we got to do, Brother Jay, as you know, is change our minds. Is change
well, my
our
brother,
minds.
I'm hoping we do. At some point in time, I hope we wake up and I hope that we become honest with ourselves. And the first thing, in order to be honest with ourselves, we must accept the fact that this Urugu is our perpetual enemy, that he will always be our perpetual enemy, that he's using his usefulness for us in this country, and that he's looking for ways to eliminate us, and that, hey, listen, we are also under threat by other groups, because you got to watch out now for that Babalu, because he got to grind to pick with this Urugu for what he's allowed to happen down in his little homeland, Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. So what they're going to try and do is join some sort of alliance with us to get what they want and do like everybody else has, white women and everyone else, you know, kick us to the side and do their thing. Because the one thing that they have over us is they tribal.
Yeah.
They're about their people. They're about being collective and doing their thing, building community. And we're going to learn, hopefully, if we study it and we look at it, what it is to know what payback is about, and when you get payback, to also get power. Because Baba Louie is coming for this white boy. Because think about this, and I'll leave on this note. Over these last 4 months in Puerto Rico, the conditions haven't gotten no better. But what have they done? They've come here and they've migrated. Why have they migrated? Because they placed themselves in a position to migrate. What about the Negro? The Negro ain't in no position to migrate no damn place.
No, not at the time.
Do you see what
not
I'm
at
saying?
The time. Yeah,
we
I understand.
Can't migrate no place.
But see,
we can't even go home because
right.
we hate home.
Right.
Something we don't even understand.
Right.
You know? So
and, home ain't Mississippi, y'all. Home ain't Alabama. Home ain't Georgia.
Hey.
We're talking about going home. And
Brother
see, that's
all
a
I
concept.
Can tell you is you have a beautiful day. Enjoy the Kwanzaa season if I don't get a chance to speak to you again. And listen, man, I thank you again for doing what you do, for giving us the knowledge and the wisdom that you give us, and to making us see, hopefully, the light that this Urugu is our enemy. And the ancestors will always embrace you and love you for that, brother.
Brother Jay, I appreciate you, man. Hotep, I appreciate you. Thank you for always listening, always calling. Appreciate you very much, dear brother. Appreciate that. We have another caller. And good afternoon, caller.
Good afternoon, Oshi.
Hey, Brother Muhammad. How are you, dear brother?
Well, I'm in Madison, Wisconsin.
That says it all, right?
You were asking how I'm doing. But, you know, I've been listening to you, Oshie, and you all jumped from the Atlantic Ocean into the Pacific Ocean. You went from discussing
Kwanzaa,
Christmas Massey,
yeah,
to calling out Minister Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam. Because what the brother, you know, and you know, I know Minister Farrakhan has a lot of fans.
Yeah.
You know, he has members and followers, and he has fans. And his fans are really larger than his followers.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
Because we've been sort of pulled into the Big Brother syndrome that, you know, or the era of charismatic leadership, that someone has to eloquently state our case, even if they're not doing anything. And when the brother said that what he, I'm going to say it in my words, what the brother said. Show me in the 40 years of Elijah Muhammad collecting money from thousands of Negroes and Minister Farrakhan since 1978 replicating that same thing, and show me their community. Show me their land. Show me their produce, the farming. They have one institution besides the mosque or the temple. The University of Islam, which
in Chicago,
there's no University of Islam in Milwaukee.
What is it, in Chicago, right?
There's no University of Islam. Most of the cities where we live. And so, like I said, I think we still suffer from, you know, the era of charismatic leadership where we say our leaders. And you know, who are you talking about in 2017? There's nobody out here just talking is going to lead us to anything. And as for communities, the closest I ever came to living in a community in America outside of where we grew up in Milwaukee, we you know, the neighborhoods that most urban areas where African Americans live are not communities, they're neighborhoods. But we kind of grew up even in the 50s and 60s in communities because the majority of us, by virtue of segregation, were forced to live amongst each other. But the closest reality, and this is after I heard this in a statement, Imam Jamil El-Amin, the former H-Rap Brown, for a period of time, I lived in his community in the West End in Atlanta. And I've never had an experience like that since, where Muslims lived in this community. They weren't 100%, but they were a large part of the people that lived in the community. You heard the call to prayer five times a day. You saw kids drop their bikes, drop their basketball, come to the mosque, wash up, pray, go back to the, you know, there were businesses there. So if that can be done here. Look at the Mormons. Look at the Mormon history. They really took the state of, I mean, what was Mexican territory and joined on to the United States with it. Now they mainstream. You can look on PBS and see the Mormon Tabernacle Choir suite. They go all over the world. We just have not had really serious leadership to put us in a position where somebody, we start something and build from it, because we've been so fragmented against each other. We step all over each other so easily that, you know, it's just sad. And especially on a day like this, because if you like you and me, most of your family are somewhere participating.
Exactly.
In something.
Yes, they are. You know that.
You know, that's the reality. If you know this truth about Christmas or about Jesus, I don't care whether it's from the Afrocentric perspective or me as a so-called Sunni Muslim, you know, rejecting that. In America and most of the world, man, you even got Arab so-called Muslims from overseas. They somewhere celebrating Christmas in the suburbs with their neighbors or amongst themselves right now. That's how cracked up it is. That's how tough this man has laid this thing down.
Yeah,
I hate to, but you have to give him credit. They came up with a game, and it was mostly targeted to us in the motherland. And it's been working well for a long time.
A long time, brother.
It's like we've been on. Yeah. It's like we've been on a several thousand year period of mourning of just having everything you had taken away from you. If you noticed the piece last night, Oshi, before we stopped talking, to see the piece on 60 Minutes where they were saying that these Christians in Iraq who were running from ISIS were able to save some documents, some of them in Aramaic, the language that Jesus spoke, and but they read this document where it said, they said it was from Prophet Muhammad, and he said, Jews and Christians are safe from their enemies, and they are safe to practice their religion under this.
Right, right.
And so when you look at how people have been turned against each other, hey, we was Muslims and whatever we were in Africa, and we weren't doing to each other what we're doing to each other now in Nigeria.
Right.
Muslims well, all over. And Christians in the Sudan. Killing
look,
each other.
Right, look at the Sudan.
Burning mosques and churches down yeah. in Nigeria.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yes, it is. But it has been proliferated.
The killing that goes on in Milwaukee and Chicago and Baltimore, everywhere, you know, we are as bad a shape as we in ideologically, psychologically, culturally. We got the nerve to kill each other.
Yeah.
And it's happening over there and it's happening here.
Yes, it is.
I can't even really say this, you know, without my voice is in my throat saying this.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to admit to. You know, I know Pianki called me, man, about a month or so ago, especially when we were talking about Zimbabwe and what happened at Zimbabwe. He was a little upset by it, too, you know. And I told him, you know, that I got the radio going back again, you know. But my argument consistently with Pianki was that he believed that what he was able to achieve, that anybody can do that, you know. And I would never argue a point, Brother Muhammad, that of what an individual can do. There have been people who have risked shark-infested waters, jumped on overcrowded boats, put their life savings into a lottery to come here to America, the land of the dream. You know, so I could never argue that point that an individual could say, I'm committed, I'm going to persevere, I'm going to overcome whatever obstacles that are put in my path to seek my fortune, my fame, whatever that is. I'm not going to argue that. What I argue is what happened to us collectively. I argue, why is that in every major social ill, we're only supposedly, 30, let's say 15% of this nation's population. But we're damn near 50% of the prison population. And every social ill is more profound in us than anybody else. That's what I argue. Collectively, we are in a very bad situation. Unfortunately, Brother Muhammad and listeners, is our people, African people, and not just here in America, but globally, don't want to throw off the yoke of European oppression and the whole idea that in their minds that they can't do it, so they believe that they can't come together. Because what you can't conceive, you can't achieve. Many of our people just cannot fathom or even visualize us doing anything independent or outside of Caucasians. That's why I use those particular metaphors of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed upon us to be able to step outside of that. That's why I use the vice grip analogy that they put on our minds, and the only way to release that vice grip is requiring knowledge of self to turn that knob to release the vice grip. And now, not to challenge Caucasians. Hell with them. They're going to do what they're going to do because they suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe that they are superior, and not a damn thing that you can say or present to them all the proof that there is, because there is a hell of a lot of proof to prove that they're not, but they dismiss it. But unfortunately, Brother Muhammad.
Well, Archie, look at the case of Puerto Rico.
Yes.
And, you know, I was married to a sister from Puerto Rico. And so it gave me a look inside the mindset of these people who, in the Caribbean. Puerto Rico was definitely a part of the transatlantic slave trade. Because when you look at the people who are there, they're a combination of indigenous people, Africans, and Spanish people. But they practice the same color consciousness that you see practiced in America. But look what happened to even the ones who claim their Spanish heritage and reject their African heritage when the hurricane hit.
Mm-hmm.
Now you see how the people who yep. look like, you know, what you consider to be superior think of you when you get in a situation where you can't survive unless you can rely on them or you suffer resilient.
Yeah.
And so, you know, at this point, I guarantee you, how much melanin any of them have since this hurricane hit. You know, they know what the common denominator is.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know.
And then the idea, well, dismiss Trump because he's an idiot. But even the administration, even Congress, and so forth, they know that that's a commonwealth of the United States. They know that St. Croix, St. Vincent, St. Thomas is a so-called commonwealth of the United States, and they are responsible for that. That is a colony of theirs, if you want to use that particular term. But yet they advocate.
It has ocean. Yo. It has the same status as Washington, D.C.
Right.
Washington, D.C. is not considered
right.
A state like Wisconsin because they don't have a state senator like
right.
Tammy Baldwin and right. Johnson from up around Oshkosh.
Right.
They have what they call a shadow senator.
Exactly, or so, a shadow
so
congressperson.
Puerto Rico has the same status as Washington, D.C. and Guam and some of the other
right.
places that they
right.
they have colonized, and they say, okay, well, we going to embrace you, but you ain't really.
No, you're not a citizen. No, you're not a real citizen.
Yeah, you're not a.
You know,
yeah.
It's just like.
They're citizens in some respect because you can get food stamps or food share in Puerto Rico. They can get these businesses, but they've never had the status, say, of Utah when the Mormons the American government had declared war on and they left the United States going to the Great Salt Lake Basin. That's Utah. And they became a state because the government said, well, if you drop plural marriage, we'll recognize you as a state like the other Texas and California, the other land we stole from Mexico, and you'll be part of the United States. Washington, D.C. does not have that designation.
No.
It's tantamount to Puerto Rico, but they're farther away. And
but
so,
also, too.
And they are Africans.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
We know the game. We know the game.
That's it.
The game is it's a cold-blooded game. But just, you know, when you think of all the people, I have three siblings live in Milwaukee. None of them believe what I believe. I'm not just talking about religiously. I'm saying they're Christians, but their idea of celebrating Christmas has been reduced to what represents the major portion. And you may know the percentage, but this so-called Christmas holiday season, the major part of this economy turns on.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
So they have no idea. Oh, see, even if I celebrated Christmas, where would I get the money to do the nonsense these people are doing this time of year?
You go in debt.
I ain't hit the lottery.
Yeah,
Social Security is going up 2%. I won't get that till after the first of the year. Where would I get the money to do this? So you know people are self-oppressing themselves.
Oh, no doubt.
With believing. But it basically comes down to one of the main mindsets of white supremacy is, you talk about it often, individuality, the focus on myself. That's why I stopped on Facebook. I stopped doing the birthday thing because mm-hmm. every day is somebody's somebody's birthday. And after a while, I thought, man, I'm not spending half my time saying happy birthday to these strong people that some of them I ain't seen in 30 years. It's nice to reconnect with them. But the mentality is that you do things in this society successfully if you don't stop and think about why you're doing what you're doing.
Right on. I got another call. Let me take this call. Hold on, Mom.
Go ahead, Osh.
Okay, hold on.
Go ahead.
215, how you doing?
Hey, Brother Osh, this is Brother Joe calling back from Philadelphia.
Hey, Joe, thank you. Go ahead.
Brother Osh, I just wanted to make a correction. If you have a right to the opinion and stuff, I just want to put it out there. I don't take no shots. I just put it in fact, I'm a member of the Nation of Islam myself. And Minister Farrakhan is not above. He can be criticized, but I like the facts to bear out the thing. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, during his years before he made his departure in 1975, this man had farmland. So if Brother Muhammad want to know what he did, all you do is check the record, Brother Muhammad. This man had farms all throughout the South. He had farmland. He had schools for our people, supermarkets throughout the black community. I grew up in Philadelphia. I know what I'm talking about. He had restaurants throughout Philadelphia. He had supermarkets for our people. Our people had jobs. He provided food for our people. Now, his son, Warf D. Muhammad, who was so westernized, he helped destroy what his father did. You know, and I'm not putting that negative about the brother because he's passed on, but the truth is the truth. Imam Warf D. Muhammad did so much to destroy his father's teachings of what his father put out there for our people and stuff like that. So if you want to point blame, if you want to say that, you can point at Imam Warf D. Muhammad. And the sad part, before he made transition, he said his father was right. You know, so the point is, he did all that while he was living, but yet at the time he made transition, he said his father was right. So he did all that to cause all the dissent and foment dissent and stuff in the nation and stuff like that, because he wanted to be accepted by Caucasian people and stuff. So the Nation of Islam has a great history in this country of doing for our people. How can you sit back and look at a man, Brother Oshie, who can take a sister and brother that was a drug addict? And I know people that was on how on cocaine, heroin. They heard the messages, teachers, and they stopped overnight, clean themselves up overnight. That's a master teacher right there. Whether you agree with his teachers or not, that man has some divine guidance and stuff like that, because no other people I know can do that, can make a sister brother that's out there selling their bodies, you know, doing all kinds of drugs and stuff of ill repute, heard the teachers and clean themselves up and never look back. You know what I mean? So I always believe in giving credit. I give respect and credit and honor to all of our people that fought for our people. I don't have to agree with all their methods. I didn't agree with some Dr. King's things early on, but I would never sit there and be negative, because Dr. King did what he had to do at the time. Like, he woke up at the end when he saw how white people was. He finally realized the nature of these people, and that's why he said to Harry Belafonte, "I think we've been integrating in the burning house." I honor Dr. King. I honor Sojourner Truth and all our people that put their lives on the line and shed blood for our people. So I give credit. I don't agree with everything they said or did, but I give honor to all of our people, sisters and brothers and stuff, to hear that fought for our people, Brother Oshie. You know what I mean? I believe in giving everybody they just do.
Right on.
You know, and again, Nation of Islam is not a, but Minister Farrakhan can be criticized. No question, he's a human being. But like I said, I'm not going to sit there and say the man out there, as you're speaking right now, Oshie, he's trying right now to get farmland again for our people throughout the South.
Okay.
You got Brother Ridley Muhammad, who's trying to get the farmland right now to be able to feed our people, because you have to be able to feed our people, Brother Oshie.
I hear you. Right on, Brother Joe. I appreciate your call. Thank you.
So that's all. I just want to make it as a point of clarification. The Nation of Islam got work to do. They still got a lot of work to do.
We all do.
But like I said, we all do. We all got a job to do. And one thing, Brother, real quick. I hope you can have Brother Akbar Muhammad on. He's coming to Philadelphia January the 4th, because, you know, he just wrote a book called Africa in the World.
I need to about that.
And here's a brother that lived in Africa for many years. So hopefully you can have him on your show, because this brother can talk about Africa from a perspective.
I would love
that
to.
Very few can.
Because I know when I went to Africa, went to Ghana for its 40th celebration of independence, Akbar Muhammad was there, but more deeply, Minister Farrakhan was there, and they spoke at the Du Bois Center. You know, W.E. Du Bois is buried there in Ghana, because he became disenchanted of the madness that was happening
there. Yes, he did.
Okay, my brother. Thanks a lot, Joe.
Thank you, Brother Oshie. Peace and blessings.
Peace. Brother Muhammad, I don't have much time, dear brother. I know you'd like to...
Well, Oshie, if it wasn't for the fact that I'm 68 years old, and I spent 5 years in the Nation of Islam under Elijah Muhammad from 1970 to 1975, and I followed his son, then it may not have been necessary for him to say all of what he was blessed to say. Hey. I'm talking from personal experience, and yes, I anybody deserves to be criticized, but at the end of the day,
I gotta go. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we're in every program, but the words of Stephen Biko, the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. And this program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Shem Hotep, go in peace. Asante Sana, thank you. Peace, my brothers and sisters, and happy Kwanzaa starts tomorrow. Go somewhere. Go to somebody's home. Happy Kwanzaa, brothers and sisters of Baragani.